Welcome to Prophecy Radio, a Percy Jackson podcast that dives deep into all things Rick Riordan. Hi, this is our first episode of Prophecy Radio. I'm Karen, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Kristen. Hi, everyone.
And just to tell you guys a little bit about us up front, we plan on being a weekly podcast about everything to do with Rick Riordan and all of his projects. We want to talk about the books, new and old. We want to talk about all the adaptations. Yes, maybe, probably even the movies. I know we're not supposed to. We might mention them once or twice. We want to keep you guys up to date on all of the news that's coming out because there's a ton lately. And we want to talk about Rick Riordan Presents, his imprint that spotlights all of the other mythologies written by people who grew up hearing these stories. I'm a huge fan of that imprint and a lot of those books, and we want to talk about it all. So I guess to start off with, we should probably introduce ourselves for those who don't already know us. We both come from Hypeable.com, where we've both been working there for, I've almost been working there for 10 years. You've almost been working there for...
Between 9 and 10, yeah.
Yeah. So we've been there for a while, and unfortunately, heartbreak, Hypeable just decided to shut down. They're closing their doors on September 30th. We're still on the other side of that right now. It hasn't closed down. We're recording a little bit early, but by the time this comes out, Hypeable will be closed, and I'm still kind of wrapping my head around it.
It's a lot. When you spend 9 years with anything, it's hard to kind of just be like, okay, it's done now.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to move on. It's hard to wrap your head around just the idea of it not being there, but we'll get past it. I promise.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it's extra special for us because Kristen and I met through Hypeable. We met like, I don't know, seven-ish years ago is when we really started becoming friends. We went to San Diego Comic-Con together. We bonded over Arrow. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And The Following, which I made Karen feel bad for serial killers, and she was never the same.
No, I wasn't. And because of Hypeable, we're roommates. We live in the same apartment together.
Yes.
And we have been for like 6 years now. So we're pretty good friends, I would say. I mean, she's okay. It's whatever. But one of the other things that we bonded over was Percy Jackson. And I've been reading Percy Jackson for at least 10 years. I mean, it was before I came to Hypeable. It wasn't when the first book first came out, but it was soon after. It was at least by the third one that I started reading it. And I actually we just discussed this last night. Apparently, I was the one that inspired you to read Percy Jackson.
Yes, I think I'm trying to remember when the first movie came out, and I'm pretty sure I had, like, heard of it or something, but I didn't, like, know about it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Karen was the reason that I read Percy. And I don't remember if it was because, like, you were going to be working on articles or something I don't know. But I know I didn't read it until I was working for Hypeable because I didn't even know about it, really. But I'm really glad I did because it's awesome and we love Rick. And
over the years we've, you know, read the main series pretty much together and, you know, talked about it and stuff, and it's been something that we've always really enjoyed. The first ever article that I wrote for Hypeable was about Percy Jackson. I am not linking to it. I'm not even going to tell you what it's about because it was kind of embarrassing, but I've, you know, literally been writing about Percy Jackson for 10 years. And it never occurred to me before now to make a podcast, despite all the podcasts we've done, which is so funny. But we're really excited to be here now, and I can't wait to see what happens with this podcast. So I guess the other thing is, Kristen, tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself, either what you've been doing on Hypeable, what you do in the real world, which we don't have to talk about because it's the real world and it's terrible.
And my real world job is boring.
But yeah, let people know a little bit about what you're into.
Okay, let's see. My name is Kristen. How did I not prepare for this?
especially because we've done this like countless times.
I know, right? Now, I'm a big fan of, you know, movies and TV and books and whatever. At Hypeable, I have done a little bit of everything. So I started out writing features. I quickly moved into covering TV shows. I was a big Vampire Diaries fan and covered that for a long time, including all the spinoffs, the originals, legacies, all of them. I kind of morphed a few years after starting at Hypeable. I morphed into the, basically the movie reviewer, the primary movie reviewer, which was kind of, it's the passion project part of this for me because I went to school and got, I actually have my Bachelor of Arts degree with my major in popular culture, which is kind of funny. But my minor was in film, and I kind of directed my minor to focus on film writing because I did one day want to get paid to review movies. And I did for a little while in Hypeable, not like, you know, quit my other job money, but I was able to, you know, get paid to write movies, movie reviews, and write about movies, which is really cool. In any respect. But yeah, I mean, in my day job, I work for a chain of nursing homes and I'm not working with patients, just, you know, helping organize and keep their drug supply going. God, that sounds so weird. But no.
It's a good thing. Good drugs.
Right.
They need
it's
them.
It's the helpful kind, not the hurtful kind.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, it's, that's a little snapshot of me, I guess. Hi. And now we're going to talk about Karen and
yes.
What makes Karen Karen.
There are a lot of answers to that that we probably won't get into in this episode. But yeah, you know, like I said, I've also been working at Hypeable for about 10 years. I started off as an editor and I have been editing on the site pretty much up until recently. The first big thing that really I was allowed to do, I did ask permission, was cover Teen Wolf. And Teen Wolf was my big thing. So if you guys are listening to me from that fandom, obviously, like, we did Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which was probably my most successful podcast so far, and we got to do a lot of really cool things because of that.
Talk to a lot of really cool people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that it is, I'm not exaggerating when I say that Hypeable and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast changed my entire life. Like, literally changed everything for me. And we're really excited. Well, I guess we could also just quick mention this podcast is going to be going up on subjectifymedia.com because that's our new little home. It's going to be a bit smaller than Hypeable, but I'm doing that with a bunch of other colleagues of mine from Hypeable, including Natalie from Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, and Kristen's going to be writing there and stuff every once in a while. We're going to do book reviews and stuff, but that's going to be the home of Prophecy Radio now that Hypeable is shutting down.
And we're excited. I mean, it's a new adventure. It's a new era. And this is our way to stay connected to Rick and Percy, especially because that is one of the things that we were kind of concerned about is, you know, Hypeable had kind of done pretty well with Percy Jackson. And like, we loved covering it. And we loved that people kind of came to Hypeable for Percy stuff. But saying goodbye to it, it was like, we're not ready to say goodbye to Percy yet.
Not at all.
So that's how the podcast was kind of born. It was like, well, we can definitely do a podcast and we can definitely talk about the books and the movies and the upcoming TV show that we're all super excited about. So yeah, it was kind of born out of necessity, but also something exciting and fun and just fresh and new too.
Yeah, I mean, doing Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, covering Teen Wolf, covering Percy Jackson has taught me a lot of stuff. And like you said, it's afforded us a lot of opportunities to talk with Rick in the past, to talk with the Rick Riordan Presents authors, and with Teen Wolf, you know, that entire cast and crew was so kind to us and everything. And that's the sort of thing that we want to bring to this podcast, is being able to keep in touch with people like that and bring you those sort of interviews and stuff. So we'll get into a little bit more of what we want to do with the podcast here in a minute. But aside from Hypeable, I've been a freelance writer and editor for technically about 10 years now. And I had like some other jobs back then, but it's been at least 6 years since I've been full-time, and I was doing a lot of editing and stuff, and writing has always been my passion. I have a degree in art history that I don't use, so that's a little less relevant, although I could make it work somehow. I mean, art history and pop culture and all that stuff is all related anyway.
And it does kind of factor into some of the Percy things, because
that is true,
because Greek myth and all of that is wound into art quite thoroughly.
And when I was studying that, I've always been obsessed with Greek mythology, and so I wanted to study the classics and everything, and didn't get around to it, but that's okay, because I actually have my dream job now, which is writing full-time. I'm an author, which is still really weird to say. I feel very uncomfortable right now, but I have some books out there, and that's what I get to do on a daily basis. And it's been that in Hypable, and now it's going to be that in Subjectify Media and this podcast. And I want to put a lot of time and effort into this podcast, because I am so excited for what this could mean for us. So I guess that's a good transition into what we want to do with it, which is everything that we possibly can. And true. I think we should start off with our name, Prophecy Radio. We batted around some names for a while. I mean, like a couple of weeks, we were really trying to come up with stuff. And I think I ended up writing down a whole bunch of words that I liked, and radio was one of them. And you came up with prophecy. You mentioned prophecy.
Well, there was some talk about an oracle, and we were trying to kind of bring up, like, you know, Percy-related words that could be fun for a podcast title. And, yeah, we were talking about the oracle, and we were trying to work that into something. And then it was like, wait, what if we don't talk, you know, not the oracle, but the actual prophecies? And then it just kind of popped out of our brains.
It's so fitting, because there are prophecies in pretty much every series. You know, even the Rick Riordan Presents books often lean on prophecies. It's very embedded in Greek and Roman mythology, and it was kind of a fun, mysterious sort of title that I really like it. I'm really in love with our name, and I'm so glad we went with that.
I am too. I think it's good fun, and maybe sometime down the line, especially when the TV show is like on air or whatever, there can be some prophecies made.
Yes, exactly.
Which would be lots of fun. I mean, right now we've read all the books, so it's hard to prophesy about things you already know. But when it gets to when we get to some of the unknowns about Rick's future and his books and movies and TV shows or whatever comes in, you know, whatever comes in the next decade, who knows?
Yeah.
It'll be fun to kind of maybe do a little prophesying of our own.
I also really want to give a shout out to Angelica at Cat in a Box Graphics. She's one of our good friends. Somebody else who was also at Hypable and did a lot of stuff for us. Percy related too, when we were doing graphics at Hypable.
Oh yeah. She was my saving grace because I am useless with Photoshop. I just stare at it for a while. She's incredible, and she created our logo, which you've probably seen if you've clicked on this, and we are in love
with it immediately.
So much.
A couple of different options, and we decided to rank them on our own and then tell each other our rankings, and the number one pick was unanimous. I mean, it's so perfect. She's a genius for putting this little trident on the mic and everything, and
we're in love.
Stare at it forever. Yeah, it's so great. So, yes, thank you so much, Angelica, who is a Percy fan, who has been helping us all along. We really appreciate it. So last, but definitely, definitely not least, we want to talk about our hopes and dreams for this podcast, which my aspirations are lofty, maybe a little crazy, but given everything we've done, I don't think it's that crazy, but we're putting a lot of hope out into the universe and really wishing that it comes back to us tenfold. Mostly what we want to do here is we want to talk about the books, like I said, new and old. We're going to be doing chapter reviews every episode, starting with The Lightning Thief. It's starting with this episode, and we're going to continue through the books, you know, for as long as we can, maybe until we die, who knows, because it's going to be a while. But we want to talk about the other books in the other series. He's got Daughter of the Deep coming out. We will be discussing that. We want to talk about Rick Riordan Presents as much as possible as well. We want to stay up to date on all of the news. We're definitely going to be talking a lot about the Disney Plus show, because we are excited.
Oh,
so excited.
Yes.
yeah, when that comes out, we'll be doing episode reviews and everything and talking about it and speculating, you know, like you said. And I think that's going to be really cool.
And not just Percy, but also the Kane Chronicles series. Yes. That's being, you know, discussed at Netflix. And mm-hmm. Netflix is so secretive, they may have shot the whole damn thing and not told us yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, we definitely want to talk about all things Rick, not just Percy, but mm-hmm. of course you can't, you know, discount Percy.
And you love Magnus Chase as much as I do. We are both huge fans of Magnus Chase.
It's very close. Yeah, very close to our hearts.
So that's something that I want to get into at some point down the line. But we've got a lot to do to start off here. We also, like I said, want to do as many interviews as we can. I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to get some of the Rick Riordan Presents authors on here to talk about their books and talk about how much they love Percy, which I'm very excited about because they're all fans of Rick's and everything. How could you not be? His stories are so great. And maybe down the line, you know, we can interview the cast and crew of the show. That is going to be up in the air. We're just going to have to see what happens. But like I said, lofty aspirations. That's what I'm going for. I want a set visit. I'm just going to say it now. I want a set visit. I want to go see this show come to life, this book come to life. We'll see.
I mean, it's the dream, right? Yeah. It's the dream.
We've been on sets before, so it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But with every new property, you have to go through the proper channel. So we're just going to see what happens.
Yep. And cross our fingers and toes and all the things.
Yeah. And not to get too cheesy, but the other thing with this podcast is I'm really excited to just build a community and to talk to other people who love Percy Jackson because this fandom's really fun. I feel like this fandom has a lot of energy. There's a lot of love here because there's just so many characters to latch on to, and it's been going for so long, and it just keeps expanding, and I feel like there are people who just love the Percy Jackson universe so much, and everything else that Rick's done, that I just want to talk to people, and I want to get them on the podcast, fellow podcasters, fellow fans, our friends who love Percy and everything. We want to make this show as dynamic and variable as possible. We're just going to try to bring you guys as much as we possibly can for as long as we possibly can.
And it's the thing about Percy, and especially with, you know, how young these books are and who they're written for, that fandom is always being reinvigorated with young kids. And it's, you know, we're in our 30s and, you know, we love this story. We love these characters. And, you know, I think there are people of all different ages that love these books. So we are more than happy to have just about everyone. You know, we want everybody that loves Percy to come, you know, to listen to our podcast and to talk to us on Twitter or whatever in emails and let us know what you're thinking and how you feel about Percy and all of that fun stuff. So yeah, we're just really excited to connect with everybody and you know, find the entire Percy Jackson community and like, yeah.
Exactly. And Rick's always said that these books are for young and old, for kids, no matter their age. And I really stand by that. You know, I've read the series a couple of times, and even, you know, we just came off the heels of Trials of Apollo and stuff, and those books made me cry. They made me laugh. They gave me a lot of emotions. They still hit even when you're in your 30s. And I love that about his books because they're so universal. They're amazing for kids. And especially reading the first two chapters of Lightning Thief again really reminded me how good these books are for kids who are struggling, who are 12 or 13 years old. But it still hits when you're 30.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody wants to be a part of something. Everybody wants to pretend. You know, we grew up Harry Potter wanting our letter to come and everything. And it's still, I still have that urge to be the special hero who doesn't know she's a hero in the book. And I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Nope. Doesn't matter how old you get, that never goes away.
Yeah. Okay, so now that we've gotten through that, now that you guys know us a little bit better, thank you for sticking around. Really appreciate that. We're going to get into some news and updates. So for this first episode, I really just wanted to kind of catch us up on all of the news that has come out so far. And I've got a bit of stuff to go over, but hopefully you guys will stick with us. Hopefully it's not all everything you've already memorized. And either way, it's still good to just get a refresher, because I feel like every day, every week, Rick and Becky are talking about new things, and Ashley on Twitter, you know, they're always announcing new stuff. So it's a lot to keep track of.
I also want to, like, give a shout out to them, because I've never seen a creative person give us the inside scoop on this step-by-step process of getting a property from first, you know, first talks all the way to where they are now, which is pre-production and all of that. So we'll get into the details of what's gone on and all that in a second here. But it's really cool to be able to kind of follow along and experience a little teeny bit of this with them. I mean, I know they're the ones in the room doing the convincing, thank God. And it's just really, really cool that they've been so open about what's going on and who they're talking to and what the next step is and all of that along the way. So yeah, just a shout out to Rick and Becky and Ashley, who keep us up to date and are willing to share, you know, all the little baby steps along the way.
Yeah. I feel like that's especially true with, well, first and foremost, if you're not reading Rick's blog whenever he updates it, definitely do that. That's where I got pretty much all of this information. He really is keeping us up to date step by step, and he's not afraid to show the bumps in the road, which I really appreciate. I don't think it's, you know, secret knowledge that he doesn't like the movies, and because of that, I think he's been really open about sharing his involvement with the Disney Plus series, because Fox didn't let him do that. They didn't take his notes all those years ago, and now he's just, maybe this is silly to say, but it feels like, you know, he's just a normal guy who, he is kind of going through Hollywood for the first time and learning all this stuff and wanting to impart that knowledge with us. And like, I really appreciate that, especially as a fan and as somebody who's done journalism and been behind the scenes a little bit. Like, I love seeing that stuff. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I agree. The mystery of how, you know, books get made into movies, or things, how things, you know, get through the green lighting process and all that, is so like inside baseball, and it's so difficult to explain and difficult to kind of understand all the little things that you do. And the number of times that Rick and Becky have had to fly out to California just to sit with a different group of executives to talk to them and, you know, and pitch them on exactly what they did with the, you know, the people prior to that. Like, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of, you know, constant check-ins and rediscovering like what the series is going to entail as far as like, you know, digital effects and whatnot, and figuring out the budget and all of that. It's a lot. And so, yeah, it's just really exciting to get a glimpse at it from the outside and see how long and very dusty this road is. But we're going to get there, and it's going to happen. And we're all just really excited to keep, you know, trudging down the road.
Yes. So like I said, definitely go to Rick's blog if you haven't been there yet. He puts a whole bunch of stuff on there too, really interesting things, his trips and the books he's reading, stuff about the other Rick Riordan Presents authors. So it's just a lot of fun whenever he gives us an update. The two main blog articles that I got this information from are from August 21st and July 13th, 2021. So this is pretty much the latest information that we have so far. And going forward, as we get new blog posts, as we get new information, mostly from Twitter, we will keep you up to date on that. But here's a little catch up of what's going on right now. So far, the Percy Jackson Disney Plus series, there is no official green light, but the top Disney execs are all in, and they gave clear marching orders for what they need from Rick and his team next, which is very good news. And I mean, getting production going on a show like this, especially one that's going to be as big as Percy Jackson, because there's going to be special effects and creatures and all that stuff to deal with, it takes a lot of time. And movies that are in production are usually in pre-production for years before they actually start filming. So
yeah, and that's not including all of the rigmarole just to get the actual, like, you know, to get it to the point where you can start looking creatively at what the movie or show or whatever is going to entail. So yeah, the fact that we're to that part now where they're writing and they're working on that sort of thing, like, that's a huge step forward.
Yeah, and speaking of writing, we also have some information about the writer's room, which I am super excited about. This is really cool. So right now, the writer's room has sketched out the first season, episode by episode, scene by scene, so they could talk about creature work and production design. And obviously, the creature work and the production design are going to be very detailed and very time intensive, especially if you're leaning on CGI, which I assume they are. It's going to be a lot of work, so they really need to know that stuff ahead of time.
And I mean, to just imagine that out there somewhere is an entire first season in script form, just waiting for actors and everyone to step in and like bring it to life. Like, that for me is kind of a huge thing. It's like the first season exists. It doesn't exist on film or anywhere but in, you know, Rick and Becky's saved files somewhere. Yeah. But you know, like, it does exist. They've written it. They're happy with it. You know, like, they're still working on it, I'm sure. But you know, it does exist, and that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And scripts for the whole season, like actual written out scripts, will take months to complete. So like, we've still got a long haul ahead of us. But on top of that, we do know some information about the people in the writer's room. So it's been announced that we have two showrunners, John Steinberg and Dan Schatz. And I had a little trouble looking up John Steinberg because on IMDb, he's Jonathan E. Steinberg, and there are a bunch of John Steinbergs. So that was a little confusing. He's the creator and writer, and Dan Schatz is the executive producer of things like Black Sails, huge deal, Jericho, also kind of a big deal, and my favorite little show on Apple. Well, okay, that's a lie. I almost said my favorite show on Apple Plus TV. That is a lie. It's Ted Lasso. Sorry. But C, with Jason Momoa, they've also had a hand in that. And I know not everybody loves that show. It didn't get rave reviews or anything, but I love Jason Momoa just mowing through people. So so yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Apparently their kids are big Percy Jackson fans. So even Rick mentioned that they're going to make sure these guys do it right.
I mean, the power of kids, though. Like, yes. I swear every time a major exec does a YA adaptation, it's because their child, like, hit them over the head with it. Like, this is a book that needs to be like a TV series, or it needs to be a movie. Like, I'm pretty sure, you know, most great YA adaptations these days come to life because some kid showed their parent this movie and their parent happens to work in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kids of any Hollywood execs out there, if you see a book and you love it, like, show your parents, because that's apparently how we get all these great, fun, yeah, new things.
Didn't that happen with the Hunger Games? Like, wasn't...
I think so, yeah.
Like, President Snow didn't... I thought there was something with that, or, yeah.
It's something like that, and I want to say it happened with Harry Potter in a couple of different instances.
Like, Maze Runner, too, I think.
With,
yeah,
like, their parent either being an actor who could or could not have taken the part. If I'm not mistaken, I think the guy who plays Voldemort, one of his kids, like...
Oh.
I might not be remembering that correctly, but I think it was one of his kids that, like, was like, dude, like, you need to do this part. So... It happens over and over and over again, and it's kind of fun that it's a part of this, too, because let's face it, like, kids are the driving force of this entire series. They're all pretty young when, yeah, things kick off, so it's fun to see that their kids are big Percy fans and will make sure, you know, they'll keep them straight and make sure they do it right.
Yes. Rick and John apparently co-wrote the pilot, the series Bible, and sketched out season one, plus additional seasons, which all took about a year. So, I mean, that's crazy in and of itself. Like, I'm not surprised, because you want to put a lot of effort into this up front because it's going to make a better show on the other side of it. But I'm just so excited that they sketched out additional seasons. That usually happens with television shows, is like, you'll probably pitch the first, you know, maybe couple episodes, the first full season to a production company to try to get it rolling. But you always need to have, like, an idea for what's going to happen down the line. And of course, they've already got the outline in all of the books. They know what sort of things need to happen. But the fact that they've already thought about how to turn the rest of the books into seasons of this show, I'm so excited.
I also just love that, you know, after having the movies be the experience that it was for Rick, especially not being involved in, like, basically being shut out of the process and watching them come to life without him, I'm so glad that he's, like, been there since day one, helping sketch out the entire series, and, like, they're really involving him closely to make sure that it's a pretty faithful adaptation and the changes they make are basically signed off on by Rick, because it just feels better that way. I mean, so many of the really great adaptations of the last decade have been involved, you know, they've involved the author, they've involved the creatives that were behind bringing the book to life. So yes, it's just that much more exciting to know that everything that we see with this show is going to be, you know, endorsed by Rick. And that is fantastic news.
And, you know, he is new to the Hollywood scene and he hasn't done script writing before this, but he has always, like, even when he was working with the movies, I remember somewhere in his blog him saying, like, he knows things have to change. He knows that film and television is a different beast from a book, so things have to be moved around a little bit. So he is conscious of that, but even with the movies, they didn't stick to the core of the story enough to make him happy. And I think that, like you said, him being involved in the television show is going to be huge because he comes with at least some knowledge of how this works and how things might have to change. But also he knows us so well. He knows the fandom so well and what we need from a show like this to make us happy. And that to Disney is, it should be absolutely invaluable.
Yeah. It's gold, it's platinum, it's, you know, it's the most valuable resource they could possibly ask for.
Yes. I've been playing a lot of Stardew Valley, so I almost said Iridium because that's very valuable.
Meanwhile, I've been playing Subnautica, so basically it's magnetite for me at the moment.
Anyway, okay. Back on topic. Okay, so the rest of the writer's room. So in there, we've got Daphne Olive, who's also from Black Sails. And we have a couple of friends who have watched Black Sails and absolutely love it. We haven't seen it ourselves, but
it's on my
sure,
to-watch list.
Yeah,
I'm probably going to watch
it soon just because of this. I'd love a little bit of background. But I've heard the writing on there is fantastic, so this excites me. We also have Monica Owusu-Breen from Lost, Fringe, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all good shows. I mean, Lost had some issues. We're not going to blame it on Monica, though.
Right, no. And I was a huge Fringe fan at the beginning of that show. That show ended right around the time I graduated college. We're not going to revisit what year that was. But
you can Google it.
But I lost track of it a little toward the end, but, like, I was a big fan of that in, like, the first 2-3 seasons. So I'm really excited to see somebody who was involved in that, and, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. it was great, too. Yeah, so just knowing that they've got, Monica has all that experience behind her writing all of these crazy shows is really good news.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a large property and is an adaptation of, like, comics and stuff, so I feel like she's got experience with a property somewhat similar to Percy Jackson. Obviously, completely different tone and everything, but, like, the mechanics of it are gonna be similar, so that's exciting.
Yeah, agreed.
And then we have Joe Trax from the Lightning Thief musical. He was the writer on that, which we're going to have to do an episode on that alone because we went and saw it and loved it. Oh my God, it was so good. So having him involved, already being aware of the property and everything and the tone of it, like, that's going to be huge.
And it's also exciting because he was involved in a few other, like, adaptations, Series of Unfortunate Events, Dash and Lily. Both of which, I haven't read Series of Unfortunate Events, but I have seen some of the adaptation. And Dash and Lily, I read as a book, and I loved the book. I still haven't watched the Netflix movie, but not because I don't want to. It's because when it comes to Christmas movies, I try and put them off, like, as long as possible, and then it's not Christmas anymore, and then I fail. I still haven't watched that Disney Plus Noel show with Anna Kendrick,
really? Which
has been out for, like, 2 years, but every Christmas I'm like, okay, now I've got all these new things, and I get excited, and then I, like, lose my mind. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't watch it yet. I'm not ready for it. And then it's January. And I'm like, well, it's not Christmas anymore. So I promise I will be watching Dash and Lily this year. I just have to get to, you know, Thanksgiving and past Thanksgiving. And then I will jump in full heart.
I don't allow Christmas in our apartment until December 1st.
She's the Halloween Scrooge who wants everything to be skulls and bats and whatever until Thanksgiving. And then I'm free.
Yeah. I try not to be a Scrooge, but it's hard.
I tease.
Joe Trax has also done Be More Chill. I don't remember if you mentioned that, which is also, I've seen some things about it. I don't know too much about it, but still very exciting. And then we also have Xavier Stiles, Zoe Neary, and Stuart Strandberg as assistants in the writer's room, which Rick has specifically said they've already offered some really good ideas for the scripts and stuff, so that's exciting. And then, to round it out, of course, we have Rick and his wife, Becky, in the writer's room, which, again, invaluable to have them actually in the writer's room. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's such good news and more exciting than they know. Like, it's just really, really fun to know that they're there every step of the way and they're, you know, helping craft these episodes and all of that. It's yeah, just so much fun.
Definitely. So, additionally, they're beginning to discuss locations, which, I mean, there's so much openness about that. Like I'm not even sure. There's a lot of sets that they could have is basically what I'm trying to say. So I don't even know that we could get into that at this point. But, like, I will be very interested to see where they actually start filming and, like, what they do on location versus what they might build in a studio kind of thing. They're close to a deal with a pilot director, which is a huge step, Rick said, in getting the green light and everything. And he seemed really excited about who they were getting to direct the pilot. So we'll see what comes there.
I mean, the pilot director is, you know, as much as the showrunners and Rick and Becky and, like, the creatives are putting, you know, pen to paper and designing and creating the world, the director is the one who, you know, especially on TV, brings that first, especially for the pilot, brings that first glimpse of it and, like, organizes the entire production and, like, you know, they're the ones kind of responsible for setting the tone for that whole show. So, yes, finding the right director for a pilot is crucial, and I'm glad that they're working on a deal and they may have found that person. That's really exciting.
And there have been countless shows that have not gotten off the ground because of a bad pilot. So yes. The pilot, you know, we always watch pilots and we go, okay, it's going to be a little shaky. There's going to be a lot of info dumping in that first episode. But as long as it's solid enough, you know that the rest of the season is probably going to shake out okay. So pilots are vastly important to getting green lights from the production company, from the studio and everything, and for just making sure that, like you said, the tone going forward is the same and everything. So yeah, this is exciting.
Yeah, so very exciting.
So the big, big thing is that once those things are done, they will start talking about the next steps in casting soon, which, yeah, that's huge. I think we both have a lot of thoughts on the casting, which we'll get into at some point, just in terms of, you know, new people or faces we recognize, the adults in the show, like that sort of thing. There's a lot to talk about there. We'll probably do a whole section on that.
I was going
to
say, we could probably do an entire episode talking about casting.
Yeah. They've been very, very adamant so far that there's no information about that. They did put out an open call for Percy, which I think is hugely important. They are also very good about diversity and about making sure that the best person is in the role, no matter, you know, what they look like or anything like that, their background. So I'm very excited to see. Rick's been very specific about making sure that this is a diverse show because he wants it to reflect his books and he wants to add something positive to Disney's roster and everything, which I think is awesome. But yeah, I mean, for now, casting is like, they're just making sure that we know that we're not going to get information anytime soon. And fans are very, very excited and always asking about it, but we just need to be a little patient.
I mean, let's face it. When you start putting faces to characters, characters and you start talking about actors, that's when it gets real for, like, people who aren't in the know about all the things going on behind the scenes. So, yes, of course, casting is, like, the thing we're all waiting for. And it's the exciting part, you know, it's one of those big deals that we're all kind of, like, you know, clamoring for. So, yeah, I'm sure as soon as they have an inkling of casting ideas or, you know, people who start to sign on to things, I'm sure we will hear from them. But it is still a little ways out. They've got to get the pilot, you know, they've got to get the director signed on, and they've got to start seeing the whole vision before they can start attaching actors and all of that. So it's still a little bit of a ways away, I think, but fun to think about and dream about and all that stuff.
Yeah, and Rix has specifically recently said that they're aiming for 2023 delivery if everything gets greenlit and if nothing goes wrong, which that could change at any point. That is a pretty optimistic delivery date, but that also means that next year in 2022, we could be getting a lot of this information about casting, about locations, about more specifics regarding the show and everything. And like I said, we will bring as much to that as we could possibly find, so you guys can soak it all in.
I mean, I know 2023, you like look at that number and you go, ugh, like 2023, but it's already 2021 and we're only like 3 months away from 2022. So really, it's like a year and a half, maybe 2 years until this could be popping up on Disney Plus on a weekly basis or however they decide to do it. And so that's like really exciting to me. 2 years is nothing when it comes to production. Like, It will fly by. I know it feels like it's so long and so far away, but I swear every time I see a new movie that's slated for 2 years in the future, before I know it, it's here. And I'm like, whoa, hold on. Wait, like I remember when I first heard about this and all that. So it does sound a ways away, but it's creeping ever closer. Don't panic.
Yeah. And the good thing is we have a lot of stuff going on in the meantime between the books and other adaptations and stuff. Like, we're going to be busy. So I'm not super worried about waiting that long. And I would rather them do it right.
Absolutely.
You know,
give them the time and space they need to
don't
really
rush it.
Yeah. And who knows when the Kane Chronicles will just drop in our laps. So because Netflix is top secret about everything.
Seriously,
until the last possible second.
I'm so mad. We complain about this a lot on Hypeable because we won't know a major movie's coming out until like 2 weeks ahead of time. Or we heard that they're making this movie and then 2 weeks before it drops, we get the first trailer. And then Kristen and I are struggling to figure out who's covering it and when and all this other stuff. So
I'm pretty sure the last season of Stranger Things was like a month, like we knew it was coming a month beforehand. Like, seriously, they knew at least a year and a half before that it was going to be coming out that time. So that just drives me nuts.
Yeah, it is crazy, but it's what Netflix does, and we're just going to have to deal with it. So, you know, speaking of, though, let's talk about the Kane Chronicle movies really quick. My two sources for this, because there is not a lot of information, is NetflixLife.com and then the Kane Chronicles like fandom website, where they had a couple of pieces of information. And I'm telling you, this is bare bones, okay? Because Netflix is so notorious for these last minute drops. But the Kane Chronicles, interestingly enough, I did not put this together before, wasn't part of the Fox merger. So that's why Netflix was able to acquire it. That's why Disney isn't going to be putting out the adaptation for it. But I'm okay with this because I'm really interested to see how the two properties differ and what Netflix's, like, interpretation of the Kane Chronicles will be versus Disney's of Lightning Thief and Percy Jackson.
Yeah, it's definitely intriguing. I'm still floored by these, like, merger things. Like, somehow Kane Chronicles was, like, on a list of things that they don't get. You know what I mean? Like, you think about all these properties that, like, Fox did or didn't get, and, like, they, you know, Disney got Free Guy when they signed on with Fox, but, like, this movie they didn't get. And, you know, apparently, Kane Chronicles was on the list of things that Disney wasn't going to get, and that's just kind of weird to me that there's, like, this crazy long list of all of these projects that, you know, they've been talking about for years and haven't gotten off the ground. So it's good fun knowing that we're going to get two different, completely different versions of Rick's stories and kind of see how two different studios envision them and bring them to life. So that'll be fun. I mean, and because it's Netflix and we never know when it's going to come out, we are just waiting for more, waiting for news, waiting to know. And when we know, it'll just kind of appear, I'm sure. Yeah. And that'll be fun because, you know, we're following along with Percy and we're there every step of the way. But with Kane Chronicles, it'll be more of a surprise. They'll pull a Beyonce and just be like, here you go.
Yeah. This is also really interesting. I hadn't realized it before, but I mean, because the Kane Chronicles and Percy Jackson exist in the same universe, you know, they've met before. The Kanes and, mm-hmm. and Percy have met before. I always dream about crossovers. We're huge Marvel fans over here, so we love shared universes. And so while this probably stops a shared universe from happening, it's not the end of the world. I mean, we had Spider-Man at Sony and Marvel and everything, and that's happened.
They eventually figured it out.
Yeah. So, and you know, there's probably nothing to say that maybe the actors who play the Kanes couldn't appear on the Percy show at some point down the line or something. I mean, that kind of takes place later anyway, so there probably isn't going to be room for that, but I always like just thinking about it and yeah. speculating and see what could happen.
Keeping the possibilities alive.
Yes, exactly. So Rick's actually been working on this deal since about October 2019, which is around the same time he was working on the Disney deal. The Kane Chronicles movies, which there should be three of them, but we don't know for sure. They probably got option for all three, and then we'll just see if all three happen, because like we know with the Percy Jackson movies, if they don't do well, they're not going to make all of them. So the official announcement for the movies happened on September 12th, 2020. So it's already been over a year since that's happened. So I wouldn't be super surprised if by next year at some point we had the first Kane Chronicles movie, but again, no idea when that could happen.
Netflix does, especially with brand new properties like Kane Chronicles, they do sometimes like let us in the know about like casting decisions for right. fun things mm-hmm. like this. So if there's an actor or someone who gets attached to Kane Chronicles that's big enough that they think it'll stir up some talk or whatever, there's a good chance we may hear something, you know, a couple of months prior to it. But as we've seen with the whole Percy thing, casting is kind of one of those last steps, kind of, you know, is the last step deals. So when if we start to see Kane Chronicles casting talk, you'll know that they're getting really close to production and that, you know, we should kind of expect a movie with, you know, a year or so after we start hearing about casting. So keep your eyes peeled and let us know if you run into any Kane Chronicles news, because we're always, you know, on the lookout.
Yeah. And I mean, they would be smart to announce the cast and get the hype up and stuff, just because the Percy Jackson fandom is so big that they should really lean into that. But
agreed.
We'll see what happens. The last thing about Kane Chronicles is it is being produced by Mythomagic, which is Rick's production company. I'm not sure how much Rick is involved in the actual script writing process. I feel like somewhere in my memory, I remember him being involved with the script and like Netflix was working with him more closely than Fox was, but I don't have that exact information right now. But as more stuff about King Chronicles comes out, we'll keep you informed of that and we'll probably have more nuggets of information.
And while it might all be top secret at Netflix, eventually they will come out, and then I'm sure Rick will not be able to stop talking eventually about all the things.
Eventually they have to tell us something.
Right? And Rick loves to tell all of the inside baseball yeah. stuff, so I'm sure we eventually will get a blog post about what's going on and everything that went on. If the movies come out, ta-da, mm-hmm. He will not be able to hold all of that joy inside of him, I'm sure. So we'll hear about it eventually.
Yeah. Okay, so the last bit of this news and updates section is dedicated to Rick Riordan Presents. I just want to give you guys a lowdown on the books that are coming out for the remainder of this year. So there already were a couple that came out this year, obviously, and we're not going to talk about those right now, but we probably will touch on them at some point. However, what's coming up for us? First, we have the Cursed Carnival and Other Calamities, which is the anthology series with a bunch of the Rick Riordan Presents authors and Rick, who's writing his Irish mythology story, which I don't think is a secret that is probably going to lead into a full-on series. I'm pretty sure that official announcement is coming soon, but he's talked about that before, so we'll have to see what happens there.
And if, like me, you haven't had a chance to get into the Rick Riordan Presents authors yet, because I have not, I've been reading a million other things, and 2020 kind of zapped my reading energy, so I'm working on getting that back. But if you haven't, this might be a really great introduction to some of these authors. Like, you get a little taste of all of the different mythologies. I know nothing about any of them, so I can't say that you will or won't be confused by a story that, you know, may have details from the books that they've already written, but at least you'll kind of get a taste of all of the different things in one place. That's kind of a cool way to, like, dip your toe into the Rick Riordan Presents world and see all of the different possibilities and all the different books.
Exactly. And I've read maybe half the series, maybe not even that many, but I've read definitely a handful of them. They're all fantastic. I am constantly floored by how good these books are, and I love this imprint so much. So we're definitely going to be talking about it a lot. The Cursed Carnival comes out on September 28th. Our next episode, episode 2, will be all about this book. So we're going to basically split the stories in half and go through them and just give our thoughts on them and stuff, and we'll have a better idea. Especially Kristen will have a better idea of maybe which ones would be better to jump into if you're not familiar with them. And as somebody who's read some of these books before, I'm definitely going to talk about my favorites and all that. And then we're going to do a big thing on Rick's story too, because
I mean,
obviously. So we'll be able to bring you guys more of that information soon. And then after that is Rick's new book. Can you tell I'm smiling? I'm so excited. This one is called Daughter of the Deep. This one is not about mythology, which, I mean, you guys probably already know that, but it's based on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's basically about his great-great-great-granddaughter or something like that. And it's a modern sort of sequel to 20,000 Leagues, and that comes out October 5th, and we are both going to read it. That's going to be episode 3. We're going to discuss that. We're also going to go to one of Rick's virtual tour stops, the one on October 6th, and we're going to, you know, hear what he has to say about the book, hear his updates. He always gives fantastic information at these and gives you updates that he doesn't really post anywhere else, so we'll bring that to you guys too if you can't make it. And I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of stuff to discuss after that.
I also personally believe that he is just dropping this near my birthday just for me. So that's exciting for me. Yeah. Like, I get an all new Rick story just in time for my birthday.
Yes. Happy birthday, Kristen. So the other cool thing about Daughter of the Deep is that he did a lot of research going into this book that we'll get into also when we discuss it more deeply. But he's got a really fantastic couple of blog posts about him, like, scuba diving and stuff like that. And him talking to the guy who found the Titanic. Like, come on.
Am I remembering this correctly? Was there a picture of him in all of his scuba gear on Twitter or something? Yes, I was going to say, I think I remember reading something about that.
That his new Twitter picture and stuff. So yeah, I think it's really cool, and I'm very excited to get into, like, the background and stuff, and also just to discuss the book. So that's October 5th. Also coming out October 5th, did not realize that it was coming out the same day until I put this together, is Tristan Strong Keeps Punching. Now, this is by Kwame Mabalia, and this is the third book in the Tristan Strong series. I have not read any of them. I kept meaning to, but I mean, there have been so many books coming out, not only from Rick Riordan Presents, but also I cover a lot of the YA stuff on Hypeable, so it's just been constant bombardment. But after October, there's going to be a couple of quiet spots with the Rick Riordan Presents stuff kind of on hold until next year. And then November, December for me aren't quite as busy, neither is January right now, in terms of book coverage. So I'm planning on catching up on some books from the Rick Riordan Presents. And as I do that, we'll probably walk you guys along with us and just, like, introduce you to each of the main series somewhere along the way. We'll figure that out.
And this is the third book?
This is the third book. Third and final for this one, yeah.
Okay, just kind of keeping track. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about it, so I'm very excited to get into that at some point. So that pretty much wraps up our news and updates section for this week. All of the sources will be in our show notes, by the way, which will be on Subjectify Media, which I don't know if we can upload them to Spotify. I think Spotify has spots for show notes.
Possibly.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But wherever you find this, there'll be some way to get to the show notes, which will have our sources and a breakdown of what's in every episode and everything. So hopefully you guys had fun. Hopefully some of that news was new and exciting for you. And as the anchor of our show, we are going to get into our very first chapter reviews of Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, the first book in the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. And I'm excited to talk about this book again. It's been so long. So, Kristen, take it away.
Yeah, really excited to dive into. We're going to do a chapter by chapter kind of review of the entire, you know, first Percy series. And eventually, you know, maybe the second series. It's going to take a while. So long. So, you know, right now we've decided to do two chapters at a time and just kind of give you the highlights and talk about our favorite parts and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, we're going to start with chapter one here, and if we decide that it's going a little too slowly, we may jump up to three or four or five chapters, but for now, we're going two at a time, and so we're going to jump right in now with Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, chapter one. Let's start with our favorite quotes, because these chapters are not super long, they're only about like 15 pages or so, and it's Camp Half-Blood. Like, this is Percy in the real world, not in the know yet.
Yeah.
And so there's some fun moments that popped out of here. Karen, what was your favorite quote from this?
Mine was when Percy says, "You should have seen him run when it was enchilada day at the cafeteria," and that was about Grover. And I think I wrote this at least three times in these notes, but I love Grover so much, and it's not like I forgot I love Grover, but he doesn't have as much of a role, like, in the other series, and, like, we saw him pop up in Trials of Apollo, but this is, like, Grover.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to see him again. And just, I love how much he loves to eat and that he eats when he's nervous and he loves enchiladas and everything. So it was just really cute.
And the idea that, I mean, we all know that Grover is totally fine and that he's not actually, like, in the book, Percy believes that he has some sort of, like, injury or something that's keeping him from running. We all know that he can run. Like, oh, Grover's good. We're fine. Yeah, no. So it's really funny to think about, like, him pretending to, like, limp all the time, and then enchilada day is just like, nope, forget it. Yeah. Gotta have those enchiladas. Gotta have them. My favorite quote is not really, it's not from Percy, but it's kind of in his head. He says, "The headmaster had threatened me with death by school suspension if anything bad, embarrassing, or even mildly entertaining happened on this trip." I forgot that, like, that Percy had bounced around to so many schools, and, like, he talks about all of the mishaps at all of his schools, like
falling in the shark tank,
right? Like, oh, there's it's so crazy. So just, you know, the fact that his headmaster is, like, aware of all of his mishaps and is like, "Listen, I'm surprised they haven't blacklisted him from field trips at this point, but since they're letting him go, it's like, if anything happens, you're going to be suspended in school forever, like forever." Yeah. But no, so gotta love those quotes, man. And I have a feeling that it's just going to get more and more difficult to pick one every chapter. But for now, we're doing all right. We're staying with the program. Now let's move on and just kind of pick our favorite moments, like special things that happened that, you know, having known the end of this book and where the series goes for a million, both series go, it's fun to kind of, like, look back at these little beginning moments. Karen, what's your favorite moment?
That's exactly why I was so excited about this, is looking back at those beginning moments, because my favorite was Mr. Brunner and all of the descriptions of him, all of the interactions with Percy, knowing who he actually is, knowing that he's really Chiron. Like, I loved that Percy described him as having radar ears and his eyes looking like they were 1,000 years old, and that he'd actually been at that girl's funeral. Like, it looks like he was at that girl's funeral and stuff, because he was. Like, that is just peak humor to me. I thought it was so funny.
It is. I love it. It's so much fun. My favorite moment is when Percy is, this is after they were on the bus and Nancy Boba Fett, which makes me think of Boba Fett every time. Star Wars.
It makes me think of, like, a blobfish or something. And he's so good at the names and stuff, because that is, like, a bully's name. Sorry if your last name is Boba Fett, but, like,
It feels very bully-ish.
Yes, yeah. It does.
Yeah. No, but this is after the bus where she was throwing pieces of her peanut butter and ketchup sandwich. What are people doing? What the heck? I don't know if that's like a Rick thing. Like maybe someone in his life loves that, but I've never even heard of that.
I think he was just trying to make her gross.
Which is totally possible. Yeah. But if someone in Rick's life does like it, it's not that gross. What are you talking about? No, but this moment is from after that. It's when they've walked out of the museum after, you know, having their little like actual field trippy part of it. And she has done something awful, who knows, and the Percy kind of loses his cool, and the book actually says a wave roared in my ears, and then next thing he knows, Nancy's in the fountain and the students around him are going, what was that? Did you see that? Like,
did you see the water grab?
Right? So I can only like imagine Percy losing his cool and his power just like rippling out of him and the water reaching out and pulling her in. And it just, you know, in my head, I'm like, this is an epic, like, you know, I don't know my own power kind of moment. And it made me really happy. Okay, so now that we've got our favorite quotes and our favorite moments, I just want to open the floor for if there's anything Karen wants to talk about the first chapters themselves, any notes or anything that you just want to make sure we highlight and talk about.
Yeah, so I saw you wrote about this too because, well, first of all, love the chapter titles. I've always loved Rick's chapter titles. They are hilarious. They're so great and such a great way to just make you want to read the next chapter because they're usually ridiculous.
Oh, so much fun. Oh my gosh. When I first opened the book to read these first two chapters, like you get the list of all the chapter titles, obviously like the table of contents.
Yeah.
And I just like glanced at it and I was like, oh yeah, like I completely kind of forgot about his ridiculous and fun chapter titles, but they are so great.
Yeah. The opening passage to this book is so compelling. And I love, like, I've always loved stories that warn you not to keep reading because obviously you have to keep reading. Maybe it stems back to there's a monster at the end of this book with Grover, which is my favorite book growing up.
That book freaked me out so much as a kid. I don't like horror. And I tell you, that book was the start of it. My brothers loved it. And so they'd make my mom read it all the time. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
But I kind of think that's true. Like, maybe I do like the idea that Monster at the end of this book was maybe some inspiration
here. Yeah. But, like, this book is so good for kids who struggled in school with ADD and dyslexia and everything. And telling them that they're special. Like, that's how a lot of these books go. But with Rick's book, it really hits hard, and I love that he made this story for his son. Like, a lot of people know the background to it and everything, and I just think the opening sentence, the opening page of your book has to capture people, and I cannot think of a more perfect one than what he wrote.
It's true. It's really attention grabbing. It's fun. It's not like purposeless. Like, it's Percy literally saying, like, if you're still in the dark about all the things, stay in the dark. Yeah. Like he's really trying to like warn other fellow, you know, half-bloods, like, you don't want to know. If you've managed to, you know, not be a magnet for danger, like, don't become one. And that's really, really, really good.
I definitely would not listen to him. Like, I couldn't say no. Like, you have a secret. I want to know what it is.
Right. I would want to know, too. Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. I also wanted to, yeah, talk about, like, I love that Rick took what is perceived by the world to be weaknesses and, you know, struggles, and turns it into basically the only reason that half-bloods can, like, stay alive.
Superpowers.
He made them superpowers. And that's really, really cool. And, like, the fact that, like, you know, someone who has dyslexia in the world is, you know, it's looked at as just another thing they have to kind of, like, triumph over or whatever. But it's the reason that these kids are dyslexic is because they can read ancient Greek and, like, their brains are wired to read ancient Greek. And so it messes with, you know, that's so cool to, like, mm-hmm. take that and morph it and give kids that struggle with these things in the real world an example of how they're, you know, it's not always a weakness. Like, that's so encouraging and fun. And yeah, he did such a great job introducing that into the series that it just makes me happy every time.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was saying earlier too, is like, this book series is obviously geared toward kids who struggle in school and everything. And I think that this book has hit home with so many people because of that. But even as adults, like, you want to think that the things that you struggle with are something that might be helpful in their own way. You know, whether you have anxiety and depression or like anything else, it's just like, okay, yeah, this is hard to deal with sometimes, but also it does kind of help you in other areas too, whether it's being more empathetic with people or, you know, just thinking about things in a different way. Like, I love that. And that is the kind of message that I think can hit home with people in their 30s too, you know?
Absolutely. 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 Okay. So another note that I made is just something that kind of stood out to me, and it kind of goes with Karen's favorite moment, is Chiron, after the whole field trip thing goes down, Percy goes, you know, is back at school or whatever, and it's dark, it's night, I want to say it's somewhere around midnight, and he's, like, sneaking around for some reason, and he overhears Grover and Chiron talking down there. Like, he drops his book and freaks out and goes and runs and hides, and then he hears hooves, which means that Chiron is in centaur form. What is he doing in centaur form in the real world? Like, I know his little wheelchair setup thing has to be uncomfortable and not great.
He had to stretch his legs.
Right? But, like, I feel like just walking around in the hallways at the school at midnight, like, in centaur form is not the best way to keep a secret.
Yeah. Well, actually, this goes hand in hand with my last note, too, which is that everyone is literally gaslighting this child about Mrs. Dodds and about the things that he's seen, including hearing, like, what Grover and Chiron were talking about and everything. Like, I felt really bad for Percy because he was like, I'm clearly going crazy. No, everybody's just gaslighting you. And of course the other kids, you know, the mist took effect on them, so, like, they didn't know what was going on. But Mr. Brunner, like, that was a little mean. Like, I realize he's trying to protect him, but I felt very protective of Percy in that moment. Very defensive.
I mean, yes, we know he's doing it for his own good, trying to keep him in the dark as long as possible.
Okay, Dumbledore.
I know, but you're right. It's so sad when Percy's like, literally like, am I crazy? Have I lost my mind? Like, she existed, right? Everyone else, you know, how do you forget the older woman in the black leather jacket all the time? Like, you know, but yeah. It is what it is. And he'll be clued in soon enough, and then he won't feel quite so crazy. And I think that pretty much wraps up chapter one for us. If you have any notes or anything you want to highlight or talk to us about, make sure to reach out. We'll give you all our contact info at the end of the episode, so you'll know where to reach out to us. But feel free to tell us your favorite quotes, your favorite moments, anything like that. We'd love to hear from you. But we're going to move on to chapter two, and I'm going to let Karen lead us off again with her favorite quote. Go for it right now.
Okay, this one was about Grover again. Told you I'm obsessed with Grover. And it's Percy thinking, he looked at me mournfully like he was already picking the kind of flowers I'd like best on my coffin. And I was just like, wow, that's so dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that I'm pretty sure comes from like the very end of the chapter. So it's like, Grover's panicking. I mean, he's just panicked about everything all the time anyway. But in these two chapters, like, you can see that he's so worried and stressed out about what, you know, what's going to come next for Percy that, yeah, he's a little doom and gloom at this point. My favorite line is also from Grover. Jeez, we're all about Grover. He's the best part of the first two chapters because Percy's still not in the know. So what do you know?
Yeah, he's still figuring things out.
But yeah, it's Grover has given Percy his card, which is hilarious, and we'll get to that in a second. Grover yells, "Don't say it aloud!" Just as Percy's about to read the address at the bottom of his business card out loud, he goes, "That's my summer address." Good stuff. Good stuff. Gotta love Grover.
I guess that kind of goes into my favorite moment because my favorite moment was Grover's little business card. Like, are you kidding me? That's so cute.
I know. I love that he has business cards. Like, I know he's not, like, super young. Like, he comes off as super young, but Grover is actually, what? He's a satyr, but he's not, you know.
He's older.
I want to say he's older.
Yeah.
So, like, he's old enough to have business cards. Like, when you're 30, 40, you have business cards. Like,
I can't remember. Like, I think he's, well, obviously he was around with, like, Annabeth and stuff when they came in.
Yeah.
So I think he is, he's a little bit older, but I don't know if he's, like, the immortal kind of old, or if he's... I feel like he's, like, 17 or something.
But yeah.
I'm not 100%
But he's a little more... But it's still just funny.
Yeah.
He's got a satyr business card, which is basically hilarious. No, my favorite moment was Percy kind of, like, postulating with the socks that the three old ladies that he saw on the side of the road with their fruit stand. Like, he's just kind of talking about, like, what those socks would fit, like, Godzilla or whatever. And I'm thinking about all of the Greek, like, monsters and things that they could be knitting socks for.
And I just realized, could they be for Cerberus?
That's what I assumed.
Oh, okay.
I was like, they could be for, I mean, probably a million different Greek creatures. And I was honestly, I'm kind of interested to see if Rick remembers and, like, puts socks on them and I never noticed.
Yeah.
So, like, I am going to kind of keep my eyes peeled for a mention of a socked creature in the future, because I want to know if they actually are for Cerberus, because it would make sense, and that's that is so just cute. Hilarious. But yeah, I just love the idea of the Fates, who we know are the Fates, even though they're just three old ladies knitting and being creepy on the side of the road. I just love the idea of them, like, knitting these ginormous socks, and yeah, it just cracks me up. So it's the little things. Okay, so yeah, opening the floor again for notes from this chapter. Anything we want to talk about? I'll throw it to Karen and get her first impressions and things first.
Basically, just that these were a great couple first chapters. And I mean, obviously we're a little biased, but I am trying to look at this from a little bit of a fresh perspective with, like, time away from having read it the first couple of times, like, being a little more analytical about it. And they're really good first chapters. There's tons of mystery. You have a ton of questions right off the bat. There's a ton of suspense. There's action with Mrs. Dodds and everything. It really, really makes you want to keep reading. And it makes sense because it's for kids with ADD. So, like, he has to keep it fresh. He has to keep it rolling. And it just, like, it holds up. I think that's the most exciting thing for me, is that it really holds up.
Agreed. I am 100% in agreement there. It's, you know, the beginning of a book is hard, especially a book where he's going to have, you know, Percy's about to have this whole world opened up to him. And these are the chapters before. They've got to set the before so that the after is, like, you know, that much bigger and cooler. And so, yeah, I think it's really interesting how he kind of sets the danger and craziness of the before. But yeah, really, really solid and really fun. I wanted to make note that I completely forgot that we don't get the big reveal of Camp Half-Blood or even the word Half-Blood in the first two chapters. Like, I think in my brain, this whole, like, first experience for Percy is so quick that I felt like by the end of chapter two, we were going to be, you know, with Grover talking about Camp Half-Blood already. And we're not. Like, we're still, we haven't even met Sally yet and, you know, all of that. So yeah, it's definitely reminding me how much there is before he gets to Camp Half-Blood, and that's always good fun. Another random thing that kind of occurred to me while reading this, Percy is at the Yancey School, which is such a weird...
Yeah.
It's a fun name, but a weird name for a school. Yeah. It is in, like, New York. Is it weird to send your kid to a boarding school in the same city that you live in? Like,
I don't think it's that weird. I think it, because it's specifically for kids who are, like, kind of troubled.
That's true.
That's probably why.
That makes some sense. Because, like, when Percy starts thinking about how his mom's place is really close by and he wishes he could just, like, go see her. And I'm like, why are you not there? Like, I know your mom loves you, so why aren't you at home? And it's
probably more regimented because of them, which is still sad.
Yeah, and it does make some sense, though. I can understand why that would be a thing. But yeah, it just was a question that kind of popped up in my head. Like, why would you make your kid live away from home? But it does make some sense. I see it. One last thing. We were talking about the Fates and the three old ladies. Percy watches them, like, clip a piece of string. And I'm curious if that's supposed to be someone's. Like, Grover panics and is like, but it couldn't have been Percy's because he would have literally, like,
died.
Dropped dead.
Yeah.
So, like, they clearly, like, someone just died, but we don't know who.
Could have been anybody, I think. I'm not sure that was supposed to be anybody specific, but I think Grover's just freaked out by the Fates in general and about everything right now. But yeah, he obviously did not want to make eye contact with them or anything.
As I would be.
Yeah.
If presented with three old ladies knitting giant socks and have, like, in the Hercules movie, the string glows. So I just always assume that people's life strings, like, glow. It's just a thing. So, like, if I saw these ladies with, like, a glowy piece of string and they're just, like, cutting them, I would be a little freaked out, too. Percy's more just like, what's going on? And yeah. Grover's like, why are you looking at them? Don't look at them. Look away. Like, you know. So, yeah. Good fun, good fun. And a great way to end the second chapter and yeah. our...
Wait, did I mention that I love Grover? Yes. I don't remember. I did?
I think you did.
Okay. Well, I love Grover.
Yeah. And we do love Grover.
Yeah.
All the Grover love here. All the Grover love. All right. And with that, we have wrapped up our chapter by chapter for this week. Feel free to reach out again with your chapter two moments and quotes and all of that fun stuff. We would love to hear the little bits that make you smile. For sure. And with that, we should probably tell you how you can get in contact with us, because that's important, and we want you to reach out. So, you can find us on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast, P-R-O-P-H-E-C-Y, Podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T. You can reach us via email if you have a few more thoughts than can fit on Twitter. And what is it now? It's not 180 characters. Now it's
280.
280?
It was 140. Yeah. Now it's 280. Yeah.
So if 280, if 280 characters is not enough to get across.
You can write us essays. We'll read them.
Yeah. Feel free to email us. You can reach us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And you will be able to find us on Spotify, Apple, and Subjectify Media, as we mentioned earlier. So wherever you listen to podcasts, we should be there. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions or anything like that. We want to make sure you can find us. So basically, I think that's it. This was a pretty good first
episode. I'm excited. I was really excited to record this. And now that we're on the other side of it, I feel very good about it. And I'm excited to keep talking about this. But yeah, please send us questions and comments. Please let us know what kind of content you want to see. We want to keep this really dynamic, and we want to be able to bring you stuff that you guys are interested in. And we'll do the best we can to do that. So if there's, you know, any specific things you want us to talk about, we will definitely get to that, especially after these first handful of episodes where we've got a bit already planned out. But after that, it's up to you guys. We'll do as much as we can.
Yep. Sounds like a plan to me. So until we hear from you and all of that, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.